From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, the 26th installment of our conversation with Professor Luciana Bone about the political economy and history of the Soviet Union. Luciana, welcome.
Thank you.
And again, it's taken us almost real time to get through this. We've been in 1912 for a good while now, a couple of weeks. We're looking today at the so-called Prague Conference that took place in January. This is a conference that was essentially run along the lines that Lenin wanted to see it run and dealt with issues that Lenin felt were facing the party. Later on in the year, in August, they have the Vienna Conference, which is where Trotsky more or less had his way, the so-called August Conference. We see shaping up in real terms a struggle inside the party. Some might say a struggle between the party and Trotsky over some very fundamental questions. So,
well, finishing the year 1912, a very important year for the eventual development of 1917 revolution. So we were saying last time, there are two events we are talking about. One is the January Prague Conference, January Prague Conference, when Lenin threw out the Mensheviks, to be brief.
Right.
And then that was followed by the Trotsky-Vienna Conference, which came to be known as the August Bloc. So, preamble. So we said last time, and I'll repeat, that Lenin and Trotsky were in opposition for almost the entire career, even after the revolution. After 1917, Trotsky and Lenin were in constant conflict over the question of the prospects of socialist construction. We'll get to that when we talk about after 1917. Socialist construction for Trotsky, of course, it was world revolution. For Lenin, eventually, it became socialism in one country, which Stalin followed. They were at loggerheads over the question of trade unions because Trotsky wanted to militarize the trade union and take away their independence. The question of war and peace came up immediately after the revolution of October 17, around December 17, and that is that Lenin wanted peace immediately, and Trotsky didn't follow, and for 2 months, the signing of the peace treaty, which Lenin wanted to sign immediately, was delayed and gave the Germans time to come back in strength and take a lot of stuff that they wouldn't have taken in December, perhaps. And they were, and they were at loggerheads over the question of party unity and discipline. And all of these divergences had great, grave implication on the maintenance after 1917 of the proletariat dictatorship in the USSR. So that's what happened after 1917. And the only change came after Lenin's death. That is, at that time, Trotsky chose to renew his attacks on Leninism, which had been going on under the guise of defending Leninism, which really then got called Trotskyism by particularly Stalin when he wrote his piece called Trotskyism or Leninism.
Right.
Now, before, this is after 1912. Now, before 1912, there had been all sorts of skirmishes and factionalism conducted by Trotsky. And the Bolsheviks had been, before even the Prague January Conference of 1912, the Bolsheviks had been waging a struggle on two fronts against the liquidators. Now, the liquidators, we said, were those groups who wanted to abandon illegality and work completely with the Duma that had been established after the 1905, that had opened up after the 1905 revolution, 1909 or so. Anyway, the liquidators did wanted all underground party to cease.
Right.
They were called liquidators.
Right.
But they were really liberals and Mensheviks.
Right. They wanted to liquidate. They basically wanted to liquidate the party and then have the members sort of be loosely associated in the legal construct of the Russian state, the Tsarist state. And as a matter of fact, Lenin writes about it and says that was characterized at a conference of the party in December 1908 as, quote, an attempt on the part of a group of party intellectuals to liquidate the existing organization of the RSDLP, that's the party at the time, and to replace it at all costs, even at the price of downright renunciation of its program, tactics, and traditions by a loose association functioning legally, closed quote.
Yeah. That amounts to disbanding the Bolshevik Party, right?
Right. They say, let's get rid of the party, and we individual, you know, geniuses of the working class will go into the Tsarist structures, and from there we'll be able to take it over. That's the argument, subtext,
yeah.
I guess.
Really strange. At this time, but between 2008 and 2012, Trotsky's activities is what caused Lenin to call him, branding him actually, Judas Trotsky.
Right.
You're right. But there had been, you know, this tension throughout this year. So the Mensheviks at that period were drawing farther and farther away from the revolution, as we just said. They became liquidators, demanding the liquidation, abolition of the illegal revolutionary party of the proletariat. They're in fact anti-proletariat. They more and more openly renounced the party program and the revolutionary aims and slogans of the party, for example. They endeavored to organize their own reformist party, which the workers christened Estolypin Labor Party, that is the prime minister that was doing reforms. So Trotsky supported the liquidators using the slogan of unity of the party as a screen, but actually meaning unity with the liquidators.
Right.
So he, yeah. Okay,
unity, to me, the concept to me is so absurd. To me, you know, a party is a place where you have unity. The kind of unity they're talking about, let's dissolve the party. That's the people that we're going to have unity with. It's just, it's logically absurd, you know? And yet that's what he was selling.
Yeah. As we proceed, we're going to ask what exactly is behind Trotsky. You know, he wasn't an imbecile, but what? Okay, we'll talk about that. So in August 1912, remember, this is what, 8 months after the January Prague conference. At the Prague conference was really the reaction to all the crisis and factionalism and undermining that had been going on. The Prague was a reaction to all that had been going on from 1908 with Trotsky. Now, in August 1912, Trotsky reacted. He formed a group in Vienna, which became known as the August Bloc. Now, this bloc was made up of groups and friends, really, that were opposed to Lenin and the Bolshevik Party. he gathered together the liquidators, the reformists, the ones that wanted to work with the Tsar's structures, and the Otsovists. He gathered these two together. The Otsovists wanted absolutely no legal participation. No legal participation. So these are two opposites that he gathered, and they agreed to be with him.
Right.
So both of these were anti-Bolshevik party. So Trotsky and Trotskyites took up a liquidationist stand and all fundamentalist fundamental issues. So, but Trotsky disguised his liquidationism under the mask of centrism. That is conciliationism. So I always laugh when, you know, they were calling with great pride here Obama a centrist. Well, what is a centrist? A conciliator.
Right.
Between, you know, the Republican and Democratic Party, you want that.
Right, because not, anyway, by the way, when you talk about centrist,
go ahead.
When you're talking about centrist, you stated correctly there, they mean between the Democratic and Republican parties and not between the left and right poles, because both of those
are right.
On the right.
Right.
So he's not in the center, actually.
Yeah.
He's in the center between two portions of the right.
Right. Well, Stalin adds that this happens within the same party, but in effect, we have one party.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
We have two tendencies within the business party, the Republican and the Democrat.
Right.
So he claimed, he had claimed all throughout, and now too, Trotsky claimed that he belonged to neither the Bolsheviks nor the Mensheviks, and that he was trying to reconcile them. So now at this point, Lenin said that Trotsky was more vile and pernicious than the liquidators, which were openly liberal.
Right.
Because he was trying to deceive the workers into believing that he was above factions. Whereas, in fact, he entirely supported the Menshevik liquidators. So the Trotskyites were the principal group that fostered centrism. Now, Stalin said centrism is a political concept. Its ideology is one of adaptation, of subordination of the interests of the proletariat to the interest of the petty bourgeoisie within one common party. Very interesting. This will come in very handy later when we talk about the 1930s and the accusation by Trotsky that the Communist Party was a Stalinist bureaucracy. You will see, we'll talk about that. So, 6 months before Trotsky's Vienna conference, Lenin had expelled them, the Mensheviks, from the Bolshevik Party, as we know. He had said that though the Bolshevik Party remained a revolutionary party, and as such it was illegal, the party would operate both legally and illegally underground and legally within legal groups, publications, congresses, conventions. Now, Trotsky in Vienna was gathering the liquidators under the umbrella of a centrist party who would have worked only in complete legality, would ban revolutionary parties and underground work. Now, I would like to know, you tell me, who was the revolutionary and who was the reformist? Who the Bolshevik and who the Menshevik, the liberal Menshevik? Who the communist and who the anti-communist? Perhaps I'm pushing it. But in as much as the party of the proletariat, the Bolshevik Party, you know, would have been banned.
Yeah, you're not pushing it. You're not pushing it. Because here's the context for that. I apologize for interrupting, but this is something that people have to understand. What you have essentially is, you know, a revolutionary movement that's being, you know, cultured, that's being, you know, developed, and a response from this basically hybrid feudal and bourgeois state to crush that, to drown it. Okay, it's enemy, and so what we're talking about here is essentially accommodating this struggle by the workers and peasants, you know, on behalf of the workers and peasants, to accommodate that with its enemy. And that is the middle that Trotsky was speaking from. And that is, in fact, yeah, anti-communist. It is per se anti-communist.
Yeah. And I think that Trotskyists are anti-communist.
Yep. Yep.
We'll talk about that.
Yep. In fact, yep. Go ahead.
So, go ahead.
No, that was the point I wanted to make, you know, just on that question.
I mean, it's simplistic to say simplistic to say that Trotsky himself was anti-communist, but those that supported him, especially in the United States, which is mostly intellectuals and stuff, it turns out that they're anti-communist. That's what we're going to talk about. So, but that has to wait until we get to the 1930s. So in the struggle against the liquidators and Otsovists, the ones that wanted to not work with Duma at all, with the Tsar's government at all, in the struggle against the August Bloc, the Bolsheviks gained the upper hand. And because what happens is that Lenin ended up saying, both legally and illegally, not two extremes, and I will explain. So in the struggle against the liquidators and the Otsovists, and in the struggle against the August Bloc, the Bolsheviks gained the upper hand and succeeded in safeguarding the first illegal party, the Proletarian Party, but in participation of legal activities, the Bolsheviks were able to join legal organizations such as workers' councils and trade unions, and those in the year 1917. And thus, in the year 1917, the Bolsheviks gained prominence in these groups and were able to seize power. For instance, the telegraph, the postal office, the armories, the weapon factories, you know, they became prominent because they had been present during the legality period of these groups, because, as we said, the repression had slightly lessened from 1909 forward, and some of these organizations were allowed to be legal. You know, so here we learn the intelligence of Lenin. Trotsky says, we completely comply and cooperate, and there is no need any longer for underground work. We don't need any legal party. And especially in Vienna, Trotsky said that the Bolshevik Party was illegal. So clearly he wanted it out of the way. And we see Lenin's genius because of the objective conditions that were going on now. You could do both legal and illegal work, and you should. So, for example, thanks to this combination of illegal and legal work, the Bolsheviks were able to become a serious force in all the legal workers' organizations. The Bolsheviks, excuse a sec, frozen here.
No problem.
As an example, they exercised great influence in workers' group at four legally held congresses that took place in that period, 1912 to 1914, but probably 1912, I don't have the exact dates. So a Congress of People's Universities, a Women's Congress, a Congress of Factory Physicians, and a temperance congress. So the speeches of the Bolsheviks at these congresses awakened a response all over the country. For example, at the Congress of People's University, the Bolshevik workers' delegation exposed the policy of Tsardom, and we're talking about 1912, which stifled all cultural activity, particularly the ethnicities, etc., and contended that no real cultural progress in the country was conceivable unless Tsardom was abolished. So would the Mensheviks have been able to say that,
right,
working in legality, that Tsardom must be abolished, since they were working with Tsardom? The workers' delegation at the Congress of Factory Physicians told of the frightfully unsanitary conditions in which the workers had to live and work, and drew the conclusion that factory hygiene could not be properly ensured until Tsardom was overthrown. You see, the position that not to be working in full legality was able to pound on that common desire that the Tsardom must go. So the Bolsheviks gradually squeezed the liquidators out of the various legal organizations that still survived. And so these peculiar tactics enabled the Bolsheviks to win over a number of Menshevik workers' organizations in the Vyborg district, for example, etc., that had been the center in the 1905 revolution, I think, in Moscow. So what we learn is tactics here. In this difficult period, the Bolsheviks set an example of how legal work should be combined with illegal work, given the objective condition. Yeah.
Right. Yep. So, okay. Go ahead. I just wanted to, well, first of all, for people to know, if you at Marxists.org, that's plural, Marxists.org, you can actually see Lenin's critique of the Prague Conference. It's called the Sixth, in parentheses, Prague, All-Russia Conference of the RSDLP. He goes into considerable detail, the draft resolutions on the Constitution, going into it, mm-hmm. and on a whole bunch of other issues, including liquidationism, the tasks of social democracy against the famine that existed at the time, tasks of the party in the present situation,
exactly.
All of this, the coming elections to the Fourth Duma, the strategy to take towards that, this
That's
petition
right.
campaign that was going on, where they wanted to drop all other work and circulate a petition on the question of the right of free association. And so the very same people, by the way, who were saying, you know, let's not have anything to do whatsoever with any illegal activity, because we don't want to associate with that. By the way, would you sign my petition on the right of free association? He takes all of this stuff apart. They establish a relationship with Rabochaya Gazeta as the official organ, and they disassociate themselves with Pravda at the time. They change the organizational
yep.
rules, et cetera, et cetera. And this is just what's happening January 5 to 17 or 18 to 30 in the old calendar, 1912.
Mm-hmm.
The entire year 1912 is detailed with Lenin's work at Marxists.org. So I suggest that people take a look at some of this stuff and you'll understand what we're talking about even better. That's why I wanted to just add that.
Yeah, and another concern was the looseness. Okay, so another thing that concerned Lenin was the organization of the party outside of Russia and
yes.
the desire to bring it under the control of the Central Committee, because as we will see, especially after Trotsky goes into exile in the late 20s,
right.
what he was gathering was around him and with his books was the international, you know, the outside of Russia adherence. And that is to say, interestingly, as the revolution in socialism in the USSR was actually producing amazing results that we talked about in education, in transportation, in health. We talked about this, you know, the Ghost Plan, and in the 1930s, the successes of the revolution. As this was happening, of course, then Stalin was successful, you know, was, and more people were drawn to the policies of Stalin in Russia. And so, in effect, Trotsky, outside of Russia, needed to gather, if he was ever, I don't know how he thought, but if he was ever to regain power or at least presence, he would have to negate those successes. And in fact, he didn't negate those successes, but he didn't attribute them to Stalin.
Right.
So you had two parties, one in Russia and one outside. In Russia, it was led by Stalin. Outside, it was led by Trotsky.
Right. The actual.
But in order to. Yes.
Sorry. The actual party was the party in Russia. You had you have the party in Russia, and then you have Trotsky in exile, calling himself the party and communicating with various people in the country, saying the party wants you to do this, the party wants you to do that. Only instead of it coming from the Central Committee, it was coming from Trotsky.
It was coming from him.
And so they adopted a resolution that said exactly this in this English translation. The conference declares that the groups abroad which refuse to commit to submit to the Russian Center of Social Democratic Activity, that is, to the Central Committee, and which caused disorganization by communicating with Russia independently and ignoring the Central Committee, have no right to use the name of the RSDLP, period.
That's right. That is, you know, so I suppose Trotsky, you know, you had to call it, what was this? You had to call it Trotskyism.
Yeah, that's right.
And it wasn't synonymous with Leninism. And even though Trotsky claimed that he was a Leninist and that he was the heir of Lenin, when Lenin died in 1924, maintained that Lenin intended him, etc., he's, as you just phrased it a few minutes ago, the movement that Trotsky drove became known as Trotskyism.
Right.
And so Stalin wrote an important document, which I don't have in front of my eyes, which was called Trotskyism or Leninism. And it's on the archives. And he makes, you know, the distinctions. He'd ask questions and he makes distinctions. And I didn't intend to go over that, so I don't have.
I have it. It was written in November of 1924. And that's the title of it. And the three sections are the facts about the October Uprising, the party and the preparation for October, Trotskyism or Leninism. And that is what Stalin writes. And he dissects it. In little pieces, and that's where we're going to have to stop today for this week. Luciana, I appreciate this, and I know it's taken us some time to cover this, you know, going down the timeline, but I'm glad we're getting to do some detail and let people actually hear some of this stuff. Many people for the first time, and for me, looking at it in this much detail for the first time, really.
Well, it's been a pleasure to be able to talk to you and to the people, and I hope they have a lot of patience with us.
I think it's worth
with
it.
Us.
I think it's worth it. Thank you very much, Lucia.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.